You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show with your host, Brian Callen.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is with great pleasure that I introduce you to The Brian Callen Show. And currently we have on America's favorite deplorable. He is, in fact, in such high demand, he has to rush off to not just one, but two shows on the Fox News Network. And so he can only give us a half an hour of our time. And frankly, we are blessed to have even that much time. So, Michael Malice, just start dispensing wisdom. What should we make of this 2016 presidential election?
Well, I don't think we know what to make of it yet, to be honest. However, I have a piece that was running today in The Observer, where I'm a columnist, and which is owned by Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner. And the article's about why progressives should be scared of a Trump presidency. I had a bunch of friends of mine who, you know, they had their histrionics, and that was fine. But they kind of emailed me or called me. They go, look, how scared should I be? And my first reaction was, like, relax. He's going to be nowhere near as bad as Bush. You survived Bush. He's not an ideologue. He's a New Yorker at heart, so on and so forth. But looking at these appointments that he's been doing over the weekend, progressives are right to be very, very scared.
Right. And so let's talk about that, because I think one of the things that I kept on, I think about you a lot, Michael,
I think about me a lot.
Yeah, exactly. I think about you in a whole range of outfits. And so, you know, one of the things that I was really thinking about this election is, you know, how does Michael feel about the whole Trump-Putin connection?
That's a good question. First of all, one of the things that when I was making the case for people that Trump's not as bad as he's portrayed, half of those Republicans on during the debate stage were blindly talking about shooting down Russian planes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm old enough to remember that being for peace at any chance was a very left-wing position, and it's a very admirable position. The idea that you're just going to talk about starting war with Russia is, to me, more demented than anything Trump has ever said. The fact that these men were well-spoken in suits made it sound like they were more sane than they were, and that's a terrifying proposition.
Right.
I think it's a very healthy thing for us, whoever the president is. I would love it if Obama had a good working relationship with Putin and with the heads of China and Germany, you know, and all these other countries. That is the way for progress and peace and civilization, and I think it's a wonderful thing. So the fact that this has been stigmatized, I am also old enough to remember, as I'm sure you are, Hunter, too, where we were taught that McCarthyism was the worst thing that's ever happened to America. It's worse than slavery times a thousand. And now the Democrats are using it against Trump, you know, like, oh, my God, he's in bed with the Russians. He's a covert Russian spy.
Mm-hmm.
I think the relationship comes down to they have similar personality types.
Mm-hmm.
They're both obnoxious, loudmouthed, strongman figures who recognize kinship personality-wise in each other. And hopefully, I'm hopeful, and I'm saying this as someone who's born in the Soviet Union, hopefully this will be a method to de-escalate some of the tension and will be an opportunity for them to be like, look, I know how you work. You know how I work. Let's cut a deal. I mean, I can't think of anyone who would be easier for Trump to cut a deal that would be mutually advantageous with as Putin.
Right.
Like, and they're the same personality.
Well, I think that's exactly what scares people, at least some people on the left, is that it is literally the same personality. And there's been this narrative floating around that, you know, Trump is America's Berlusconi, that you're going to get someone in there who's fundamentally going to be more interested in enriching himself than in making the country work. And, you know, Trump talked about draining the swamp, but that in practice, you know, the narrative on the left, and being on the left coast, I obviously hear that a lot, is that you know, he's appointed a lot of these political lobbyists.
Well, the other thing is, I think what people on the left don't realize is Putin is extremely popular with the Russian people.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we've been taught this lie that kind of like when you have these strong men at the top, it's despite, you know, the masses who are really kind of, you know, this kind of Bernie Sanders liberals at heart. Those Russian people are as nasty and homophobic and hateful and awful. I mean, talk about deplorables. You know,
yeah.
This is the household I was raised. And Americans need to understand this. Like, Putin is very much a function of his nation as opposed to Trump, you know, who you could say was kind of imposed by half the nation and the other half. That's not the Putin way. Putin really is kind of the godfather of Russia and people applaud him there. And even if they don't agree with him, that's the Russian style that Russians respond to, this kind of aggression and antagonism and throwing your weight around. So just because we like someone's style or don't like someone's style doesn't mean we're necessarily going to like or dislike their goals. Those are two separate things. So, you know, Reagan, in a sense, threw his weight around. He didn't have the swagger and the obnoxious affect of Trump. But when Reagan threw his weight around with Gorbachev, he ended up breaking him.
Right.
So in all seriousness, and this is very much a compliment, if Hillary Clinton were president, she sure as hell would be throwing her weight around with Putin.
Mm-hmm.
She would not be some, you know, shrinking violet. She would be proud and delighted to stand up to him toe to toe. I mean, no one can deny that.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that Americans always struggle to understand, people who just sort of grew up here, is that, I mean, essentially it's, you know, the liberals have, like, they're like, free democracy, discussion, blah, blah, blah. Shouldn't everyone have that? And they don't understand that what they're practicing is, you know, there's a terrible academic term for this, isomorphic mimicry, which is where you try and take your institutions and slap them on top of a culture
right.
that doesn't support them. And, you know,
right.
obviously, you know Russia very well from personal experience. I took Russian for 2 years and have been to Russia a couple of times and have obsessively read everything on Putin. And, you know, the big narrative is that Putin is the new czar. And what you're saying with, and this also fits with my reading, is that the Russians want a czar. They want
yeah.
they want an autocrat. They want a strongman. And there are amazing pop songs and rap songs that any of our listeners should listen to. Like, there's one by Timothy, which is My Best Friend is Vladimir Putin. Or there's A Man Like Putin, Takova Kak Putin. And they're all just about, like, how he's so strong. He's such a badass. You know, he cares for his people. And, you know, he has a personality cult, and he's shied away from admitting that to the West, but he does. And that's it's a cult. It's a religion. And the point is, the Russian people actually like their religion.
And we'll talk about religions. Let's talk about the progressive religion.
Because
one
totally.
Of the central aspects of the progressive religion, despite their claims of multiculturalism, is their sincere belief in universalism. The idea that every country effectively can and should be the same. This is why they're so for open borders, that when people get together, they're kind of going to average each other out and things are going to be great. And one of the big reactions with the nationalism and the alt-right and things like that, they're saying, like, no, I don't want to be like France, or I don't want to be like these other countries. I don't want to be like Canada. I want, you know, our country in our way. And to them, this is anathema.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they, you know, this is why they are so contemptuous of the red states. It's because they figured it out. The red states are backward, and progressivism has always had a history of imperialism, this whole idea of the white man's burden, that
mm-hmm.
they're going to bring civilization to the savages, only now the savages aren't the people like were claimed like in India. Now the savages are in Louisiana and the Appalachians, right? So it's their job to civilize these savages. Well, what happens when you give these savages a vote in the Electoral College? Sometimes the savages are going to vote in the chieftain, in this case, Donald Trump. So they don't understand this anti-universalist message. They find it hateful and racist, which in many ways it is. But at the same time, it is a very popular idea worldwide. And you can't just dismiss it as crazy because, like you said, different cultures are ready to accept different things.
Well, and that's the key thing is that they're trying to universalize the wrong thing. They're trying to universalize their culture. But the universal is humanity, and cultures are very different. And then the question is, okay, what culture do you want to choose? But the, you know, the I think the thing that I'm most excited about for 2016 is that now all these liberals are starting to read, you know, Hillbilly Elegy, and they're starting
right.
to understand, oh, this is how rednecks think. But there's going to come a moment, Michael, when they realize that redneck culture, ghetto black culture, and Arab culture are all the same. And it's going to be the most amazing mind fuck for Americans, because liberals are going to be like, wait a minute, we've been defending black culture and Arab culture, but actually it's the same as redneck culture. Why have we been doing that? And rednecks are going to find out that the cultures that they most hate, black ghetto culture and Arab culture, is actually their own culture.
I don't agree. I think the culture they most hate is urban progressives.
Well, they do hate that too. I mean, they hate
that much more than black culture.
Well,
black culture, they don't mind if it's not near them, but they can't escape the voices of urban progressivism from their television, from
right.
their newspapers, from even entertainment, the Ghostbusters movie. So that to them is much more something that bothers them than blacks, which is like, okay, even the KKK is just like, well, we don't hate black people. We just don't want to live near them.
Right.
But the progressives are really the absolute enemy. If
right.
you ask most of these people who are hard neck aspects of redneck culture, if you could shoot 100 people, I bet you any money that those 100 would be white urban progressives as opposed to black people.
I would believe that. Some of those rednecks are my relatives. so, you know, it's been a very interesting moment. But I think what's exciting is that, you know, having grown up all over the world, obviously, I understand that how much culture matters. And
right.
Donald Trump, that has been the elephant in the room for a long time. The liberals have tried to deny the importance of culture in education and healthcare outcomes and all these sorts of things. And now that elephant is squarely in the room, and they're going to have to deal with that elephant. And they're going to have to realize that in large part by refusing to talk about culture, that they haven't been helping the African-American communities. And one of my greatest hopes is that something that comes out of this is that Thomas Sowell's work gets recognized for the hugely valuable contribution that it is.
Well, why they're freaking out is this, and I mentioned this in my piece, it's that the press, which at least has to maintain a veneer of objectivity,
mm-hmm.
and I do think that most members of the press try to be objective and fair.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they're informed by progressivism, it's not being hypocritical, it's more being delusional.
Right.
And we all have our biases. They genuinely try to give a fair shake. I really do believe this, and I know many people in the press, obviously. Now they're going to have to report on Trump and Trump's ideas with a straight face
mm-hmm.
and give it an air of legitimacy, which it has to have just by the gravitas of the office. And this is something that terrifies most progressives, and correctly. Because for years, these ideas have been using things like heresy and taboo. I don't mean things like white supremacy. I just mean lots of other Trump ideas, like, you know, anti-immigration, the idea that strength is better than weakness, just all these, you know, kind of things that are part of his, you know, kind of chaotic package are going to be presented with a straight face. And this is going to drive them crazy, and it should drive them crazy. And I remember the 90s. When Clinton would get on TV and say things that are brazen lies, and they were transparently brazen lies, like, well, I wasn't in, it depends on what the definition of is, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the press reported it with a straight face,
because
they had to, because this is the president. And they would be like, well, here's another analysis. They couldn't say, it's obvious to everyone the president's a liar. And it's going to be the same thing. They can't say, well, it's obvious to everyone that this is crazy. They would have to be like, well, here's a counter argument. At the same time, it gives it this air of truth, which is, again, going to be a complete, complete, complete shift from how politics has been reported probably for the last 60 years.
But do you think it's going to lead to a more productive dialogue? Is it the
no,
liberals?
I'm against
no.
dialogue.
So oh,
I am completely. Yeah. My goal is the destruction of civil discourse, right? I'm an anarchist. So what we're already. Well, and Hunter, as you know, as a student of history, it used to be that you had two medias. You had the Democratic Republican Jefferson Party and you had the Federalist. And there was no pretense of objectivity. Like, I'm a Federalist newspaper and Thomas Jefferson is the devil. And I'm a Jeffersonian newspaper and Alexander Hamilton's, you know, some out of wedlock bastard piece of crap. Right.
Right.
And then when progressives took over completely, I would say around FDR, I'm trying to figure out when this actually happened. There was this veneer that we're objective, even though they were universally progressive.
Right.
And now, thanks to Facebook and social media, we are self-segregating intellectually into tribes at an accelerating rate.
Mm-hmm.
When people are saying, like, you can't normalize Trump, that just means, like, well, we don't have to listen to anything he says. Well, you kind of do. And the problem with government and it eliminates freedom of association. Because you are in the same country as someone in the Klan, you are inexorably bound with him in this covenant of citizenship, which is another reason why I'm against government. Government forces us to interact with people that we want to have nothing to do with. So I think Trump is very helpful in moving along the elimination of discourse and the segregation of us out into separate tribes. And hopefully I wrote another article, The Case for American Secession. We've had two cultures in this country, at the very least, since the beginning. There's no reason for them to be associated. And hopefully we can see that separate out and have peace for everyone.
So, but wouldn't those two countries then have governments of their own?
Sure, but that's already a step forward. That's already some competition, yeah. And then you could break it down further.
See, Michael, like, I have a slightly different analysis, and my analysis is that, you know, so what we've been having a lot of people on here from the scientific community, and the big finding is that culture is, you know, undergoes evolutionary forces. So essentially, environments pressure people into having a certain sort of culture. So the Russians have these autocratic regimes, which encourage pessimism, which then encourages more autocratic regimes, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
And I would also be fascinated to find out how much epigenetics plays into this, but that's a separate issue.
Well, there is, and there are also sort of, there are straight up genetic factors too. So for example, the East and West, the big difference is atomistic versus holistic, those two perspectives. And in general, holistic cultures actually have lower rates of depression because they have more community and family and all of that sort of stuff.
But South Korea has the world's highest suicide rate.
Well, the interesting thing, though, is that because there has always been that sort of cultural protection in East Asia, what that then means is that they actually have much, much higher rates of the genes that predispose people to depression. Because there's essentially there's that protection mechanism from the culture. So anyway, so there are all sorts of weird and interesting interactions that are emerging of what they call gene culture coevolution, where one affects the other and back and forth. But I think the interesting thing is I think that, you know, fundamentally the basic problem with Trump's narrative is that he's told my relatives that there were 1,000 jobs in your town. They've gone to China and then those 1,000 jobs are going to come back. And the reality is they're not. They're going to be done by robots and they're going to be automated. And fundamentally, your culture is going to not allow you to survive. And you're going to have to learn to like thinking for a living rather than pushing buttons in a factory.
But at the same time, I think people, human beings, and you could see this in the black community over decades, human beings are willing to endure an enormous amount of suffering if they genuinely believe that there's a leader out there who's working for them, cares about them, and is trying to make things better for them, even if he fails. You see this throughout the world. I don't think that Trump is lying to these people. I think he's delusional.
Yeah.
Or he might. I at the very least, he's going to try his best because it's going to cost him nothing, and it's, you know, the upside's there. I don't think it's going to be successful, but I do think when you have nothing going on in your town and things are dark and factories are closing down, to have someone trying is really going to be very reassuring. And we saw this with the FDR re-election.
Oh, totally.
You know, FDR went through his first term, and the economy was still a complete disaster. And everyone was like, you know what? I'm doubling down on this because the guy's obviously doing his best and actually cares about us.
Well, it's a religion, and you know, the point is there's a religion on the left and a religion on the right. We all live in a religion, and Vladimir Putin, Putin delivered some prosperity early on, but a lot of that was the rising price of oil, and, you know, he doesn't really have to deliver prosperity. He just has to keep the people believing that, you know, there are either, you know, it's the United States' fault or there's a cabal of nations that is out to get them. I mean, look at the Arab world. The Arab world is an amazing cult. You know, everything is the fault of Israel.
Right.
You know.
Well, in Putin's defense, I hate saying that term, but he obviously very much does care about Russia and want it to be great and powerful. So that is not him getting over. That is very much his core conviction.
Oh, 100%. You know, he has that great power view of Russia. And that's part of the, I think, the, you know, so for listeners, I mean, there are some great books on this, you know, The New Czar, Putin Country, and, you know, The Man Without a Face. And they'll give you a sort of an idea of what the lay of the land is and how these people are actually thinking. But, you know, the fall of the Berlin Wall was a real tragic event for the Russian people because they moved from being one of the two greatest nations in the world to essentially having failed.
And well, it wasn't a tragic. Let's say you could call it a mixed blessing. It was not a tragic event.
I don't think it was a tragic event for the world, and I don't think it was tragic for the prosperity. But what it did is it shattered a view of Russia as this great nation, and Putin is giving them back a belief that they are this great nation, whether they are or not.
Well, and they are in this sense, and North Korea does this as well.
Mm-hmm.
He is giving the finger to America.
Yeah, 100%.
And countries like that, like when, for example, gay rights, in Russian culture, gay rights are kind of very much tied in with this idea of being a kind of a pedophile. That's the kind of the overlap, how gays are viewed there. They're kind of like child predators. So it's not the same thing as here, to be clear. So when you have Americans talking about, you know, gay rights and normalizing that, and you have Americans signing petitions on Facebook, Russian people would see like a million Americans say you should have gay rights in Russia, and they would pee their pants laughing the idea that you're going to tell us how to live our lives.
Yep.
And they revel in defiance. They revel in humiliating those who they disagree with. It's very much a bully type culture, very much a thug type culture. There was this comedian, I forget his name, he had this amazing bit about how Russians are the scariest white people. Mm-hmm. And we really are, because there's this streak of sadism that is bred into us. I have it, I have to fight it. And it's there, and it's completely alien to the American psychology.
Well, and you know, I mean, that is that clash between optimism and pessimism. You know, I had a dinner recently with a man and his Russian wife, you know, and it's Bambi and Godzilla. And, you know, the United States is Bambi, and you have to understand that Russia is Godzilla, and you don't fuck with Godzilla.
Well, no, they don't think that we're Godzilla. They think we're Mothra, who's beautiful, this beautiful big butterfly,
but
it's still a pussy at heart.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you're a giant butterfly? Oh, my God, I'm quivering in my boots.
And then the laser eyes come out.
Yeah. So Americans, and again, this whole, there's also a subtle racism to it, because Americans are used to understanding that Asian countries, people look different than us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're going to act different than us. There's this alien idea of how Asian cultures are, but Putin's in a Western suit. He looks like us, you know what I mean? Just like, so basically people think, Americans, many, especially on the left, very much on the left, they think British people, German people, French people, Russian people, they're just Americans who happen to speak a different language.
Right.
And it is so crazy and so false, and they don't, and these people don't like you. Americans are very friendly, you know, everyone's your, you know, a stranger's a friend you haven't met. That for sure is not Russian thinking.
Well, and also
in Russian culture, Americans are prey.
Well, exactly. And, you know, the culture that Russians tell jokes about are Americans. I mean,
about everybody.
Yeah. There's, you know, I read one the other day, you know, what do you call somebody who speaks one language? What do you call someone who speaks three languages, you know, trilingual? What do you call someone who speaks two languages? Bilingual? What do you call someone who speaks one language? American.
Oh, that's pretty funny. I never heard that. Okay.
There are some amazing, you know, and I mean, Reagan did such a good job of this, of collecting those bits of Russian humor.
Right.
But there are some amazing ones. Where the other one that I love is the story of the golden fish. You know, man is out fishing. He catches a fish. He pulls the fish on board, and the fish starts talking to him. And he says, "You can have any wish that you want, but whatever you get, your neighbor gets double." And so the man thinks for a second, and he says, "Take out my eye."
Yeah. Yes. That is Russian thinking through and through.
Through, yeah. And
I've had to deprogram myself recently. Like, for example, one of the things, and I don't even know how this got into my head. I'll tell you two stories.
Mm-hmm.
One of which is, I got the idea in my head that if you have two business contacts, you should never introduce them to each other on the off chance that they won't like each other and they'll blame you. So there's no upside, but there's a potential downside. This is in my head. Here's the other one that was in my head. My buddy John Durant, who I think you guys have had on the show.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, he was crashing in my place. I went to the gym, and in my apartment building, there's no buzzer. So there's three apartments. Someone has to let you in the building. I come back, and he goes, "Oh, there was someone in the hall looking for whatever, Jimmy. I sent the guy on his way." And I looked at him, and if I was at somebody else's house, it wouldn't even enter my head to answer the door. Like, if you gave me an apple, right, there's a million things I could do with it. I could eat it, I can give it to somebody, I could throw it away. I'm not gonna like shove it up my ass. It just doesn't enter my head. It's that same kind of thinking, like, oh, there's a door knocking, okay, like, it's just not in the menu of options for Russian thinkers. And I'm like, wow, I never even realized I would never, you would just never ever ever do that under any circumstances in someone else's house.
Yep.
So it was so interesting that he was just like, oh yeah, I answered the door. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, you can do that because you're not, you know, living in fear.
Yeah, exactly. But I think, you know, that's a large part of what we're trying to do on this podcast is, you know, we've all picked up this cultural baggage wherever we've lived up. And,
right.
You know, we now, this is a moment for us to deal with that cultural baggage and realize that actually some of it is antithetical to our goals or antithetical to our environment. I mean, if you were unfortunate enough to be living in Russia, yes, you should be a pessimistic, paranoid asshole. Because that's how you survive.
The other thing is that just because you read The New Yorker does not mean you're informed cosmopolitan.
Oh, not at all.
Right. And people in New York are extremely provincial, And this is why they're freaking the hell out, because their fort has been ruptured, and now they've become infected with this alien ideology, and they don't know what to make of it, and they thought they had everything under control. So this is going to be a very scary time ahead for them, and it's even going to be scarier because Bannon, if he's not driven out of the White House, he knows exactly how these people think, mm-hmm. and his goal is their complete existential destruction. So when you have an enemy who understands you and isn't trying to work with you, but is actually trying to eliminate you from the earth, that is as bad, and who's bright, that is as bad as it gets.
And who fundamentally understands the flaws in your thinking better than you understand them.
Right.
Because, I mean, that's the point, is that the left has problems and they're utterly blind to them. They don't even know what they are, as all cultures are. But I think the sort of good study in contrast in terms of, you know, how does that sort of universalizing tendency that you're thinking about is that if you read some of these books about Russia that are coming out and about Putin and all that sort of stuff, read the ones that are written by Russians and then read the ones that are written by NPR correspondents.
Right.
And it is an amazing contrast because the ones
amazing.
That are written by Russians, they get the Russian soul. They understand
right.
how Russians think. And for the NPR correspondents, it's like, isn't this an exotic and fascinating experience? Oh, how quirky.
Right.
And it's all sort of this, it is the optimist writing about the pessimist, where it's just sort of like, oh, there are these interesting things, and I live in this weird la-la land, and, you know, of ideas.
Right. And I mean, can you imagine, like, going to Russia, and if you told them that one of the issues in American politics today is which bathroom transgender people can use? But that's how tone deaf most leftists are. And I am extremely in favor of transgender rights. I'm like defending it on Fox and so on
yeah.
and so forth. But I'm also aware, like, for example, here's another one. There was this big movement to give Africa aid, and China was giving them aid in exchange for like access to their mines or whatever it was. I'm getting the facts wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And they got their heads around that. The Americans were just giving them aid just out of charity. And some of these African countries were like, we're not taking this because they must have a string attached.
Right.
Like, it didn't even make sense. They're going to want something.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, and that's the thing, is that what the real opportunity is for people who are willing to recognize that our humanity is universal, but our culture is not. And if you can understand those cultural differences, then you can much more effectively navigate the world than people who exist in this la-la land of thinking that
right?
culture doesn't matter.
And this idea that multiculturalism is a euphemism for I have a black friend.
Yeah.
And multiculturalism is terrible because many cultures are just like many people are disgusting and horrible. And like Aztec culture, I don't want that. It's terrible. Or like pre-British Indian culture where sati, where the wife, the widow had to burn herself alive.
Yep.
And the British are like, yeah, we're not doing that anymore. Like, there's lots of aspects to many cultures, including American culture, Russian culture, whatever culture you want, that are horrible. So the idea that all cultures are wonderful through and everything's great, except for red states, is mind-boggling.
Well, and that, and also, again, redneck culture and Arab culture, they're both honor cultures. And so
yes.
when you're admitting more Arabs, you're admitting more rednecks. Do you want
yes.
more rednecks? Is that really what
also,
you want?
And I'm just going to have this last thought, then I have to run.
Yep.
One of the big things that were for Trump is, like, Americans don't want to be racist, genuinely.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one wants to, few people genuinely want to be racist. The idea, this has been a hard victory and a wonderful victory, and people who are on the left should very much be proud of it. The idea that if I'm as a black person going for a job interview, and I'm going to be discriminated against because of that, most Americans find abhorrent and absolutely unacceptable, and that's great that that's changed, right? So if you're in favor of them being discriminated like that, you are a racist and you're terrible, right? So that's a term you want to avoid. However, to equate that with, well, if you don't let in unlimited Syrian immigration from a war zone, from people who don't speak English, who probably hate us because we're bombing their neighbors, if you hate that, you're also a racist. It's like, yeah, you're not pulling the shell game on me.
Right.
Like, if I have to be called racist now to avoid the second one, even though I'm 10,000% in favor of being for that person on the job interview, I'm not doing it. And this has become a fraud, and enough's enough. And Michael Moore, who's been one of the smartest on the left in this whole campaign, he specifically pointed out, he goes, the same people who voted for Barack Hussein twice did not become Klansmen overnight.
Right. And I think the point is that fundamentally we need to move past the idea of being racist and move to being culturist and like recognizing that people have cultures and that some of those cultures are not cultures that you necessarily want to develop in the United States.
And speaking of culture, I am off to the Fox studios.
Do it.
Right now. I had a great conversation. I'll talk to you soon. And say hi to the late belated Mr. Callen for me.
Yeah, he will come in at some point. And Michael, you're obviously always welcome. And, you know, go spread the good news. Go spread the good news.
Yeah, okay.
All right, talk to you soon, Michael. Bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the America's favorite deplorable, Michael Malice, you know, spreading the gospel. And, you know, you'll see that Michael grew up in Russia. So he knows that there's a big cultural difference and he's really excavating all of that cultural baggage himself. And that is really the moment that we are in, humanity. We have to acknowledge that while all of humans may be born equal, that not all cultures are created equal and that they are really attuned to a particular environment. And now it's up to us mixed mental artists to overcome our cultural biases so that we can be more effective, more productive, and help lead the rest of the world into the future. We're going to build that Callen fate. Yeah. Thanks so much. And as always, you can find out more at mixedmentalarts.club. Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show with Brian Callen. Be sure to like him on Facebook. Just search for Brian Callen Comedy. And follow him on Twitter. Just search for @BrianCallen. You can also find him online by visiting his website. Just go to briancallen.com. Until next time, bye-bye.